Blog Talk Radio. Hi, I'm Linda Ellerby. I was diagnosed with breast cancer 11 years ago, and I know how scary it can be. Everything your doctor says sounds like a foreign language. HER2-new, oncogene, ductal carcinoma in situ. What do these words mean? How can you decide what to do if you can't even say what you have? Go to breastcancer.org, a special place on the Internet where you can learn how to say those words and find out what they mean. Breastcancer.org, the first place to go the minute you find out you have breast cancer.
Good morning, and welcome to Saturday Mornings with Joy Keyes. I'm your host, Joy Keyes, and I want to thank you so much for tuning in. You can follow me on Twitter.com/Joy Keyes, and you can become a fan on Facebook. Just look me up, Saturday Mornings with Joy Keyes. And now I'm on Instagram. Yes, lots of great pictures. You can tag me in a photo. You might win a prize. The other day somebody won a book. I give away movie tickets, restaurant, gift cards, all types of cool things. So I encourage you to tag me or follow on Twitter or become a fan on Facebook. I want to say thank you to all the listeners. I am so honored and blessed that you really want to listen to my voice more than a million times now. We've had more than a million downloads of the podcast at this moment. So I just want to say thank you for tuning in and listening. I hope you have enjoyed them, the shows, and shared them with friends and family. Well, this month is Breastfeeding Awareness Month. I thought that was a very important topic, and I thought a lot of people have myths around breastfeeding that I think we should try to break today. I breastfed my daughter, and she turned out pretty good, I think. I'm sure I had something to do with breastfeeding, I hope at least. I have some experts on the line because I don't know everything about breastfeeding, and that was 20 years ago that I breastfed, so I'm sure a lot of new information has come about. One of my guests, her name is Dr. Susan Vershalik. She's an associate professor of clinical pediatrics at New York University of Medicine. Good morning, Dr. Vershalik.
Good morning. Thanks for inviting me.
I also want to mention that she's the chairperson of the New York State Breastfeeding Coalition. That's another one of her many titles that she has. And also another guest we have on the line is Karen Hilton McGuire. She's a neonatal intensive care nurse. She's been that for over 35 years. Good morning, Karen.
Good morning. Thank you for having us.
Thank you so much for being on the show. She's also on the board of the New York State Breastfeeding Coalition, and she is pursuing her PhD, so you're a busy woman then.
Yes, I am.
You said yes. That's a very low one. Pursuing your PhD is serious work. I think you can be like, yes, I am busy. Well, today I think this is a really important topic. As I mentioned, there are a lot of myths around breastfeeding. Let's start with Dr. Vershalik. Who can and cannot breastfeed? Let's talk about that.
Well, and again, that's an important question because, as you said, there are many myths around it. The majority of women who are healthy can breastfeed. There are a few what we call medical contraindications, but they're pretty few. In the United States, a mother with HIV, it is recommended that she not breastfeed. A mother with something called HTLV, human T-cell lymphoma virus, which is can be transmitted through the milk, but is quite rare in this country, are recommended not to breastfeed. And a few mothers taking a very few medications, for example, things like chemotherapy or, drugs that actually affect cell metabolism for the most part. We look these up, we always check on an individual basis, but those are the majority. Anyone using illicit drugs as well, because, again, you never know what's in their dose, things like that. So those are what we would call the real medical restrictions. In addition, there are many situations where moms need extra help because for medical and physical reasons that maternal reasons. Sometimes infants with challenges, prematurity, malformations, you know, muscular disorders, but not real, you know, as I said, contraindications. Occasionally, if a mother needs radiation for something, she needs to interrupt breastfeeding, for example, but doesn't really need to stop. So there are many situations that require extra help. But
there are
very few women.
There are very few. I mean, basically, Now, Karen, in your experience, how does a woman start? What's one of the most difficult things that you hear from women? Like, is it fear? Is it fear of pain? Is it that they don't think the baby will latch on? What are you hearing when you're in the hospital from women who just begin to breastfeed?
Well, one of the number one reasons why women are stop or discontinue breastfeeding is because they feel that they don't have enough milk, or it's perceived not enough milk, which is not correct. For most women, 98% of women make enough milk to feed their babies, but women have that fear. So we have to educate them to overcome those fears and to support them throughout their breastfeeding experience.
And now, there's a term. Go ahead, Dr.
Just to clarify, I mean, there are, you know, I mentioned the, you know, the real medical contraindications. There are, you know, some women who have delays in, for example, their milk, you know, coming in. We call it lactogenesis too, but a little delays. There are some who have difficulty, as I said, for various reasons in getting started. So, and there are a few conditions associated with low milk supply, but that, again, a small minority of the mothers who attempt. But I agree with Karen, and certainly for many of our moms, one big issue is just lack of confidence, and we really need to help them, you know, get off to a good start and have, you know, confidence in themselves too. So,
now, Karen, when you're in the hospital, how can the nurses support the moms? I mean, can they show them? There's a term, many people who may not have kids or never breastfed, like a latch. Can you explain the idea of the child latching onto the breast, and is there a correct way to do that? You know, how can the hospital or nurses help the mother and the child, you know, connect?
Well, you know, one of the most important connections that a mother can make with her baby is after she delivers. And after she delivers, it is the most important time to put that baby skin to skin. And when the baby goes skin to skin, they learn, and they go through 9 different steps and stages in order to latch onto the breast. In my experience, if a baby latches to the breast within that hour, the breastfeeding experience continues and is wonderful. The other thing that a mother can do is keep her baby with her, because she needs to look and see and learn all the cues that the baby is giving to her. When she's with the baby, she then learns that, and the baby and she become one.
Now, Dr. Vrsaljic, in terms of breast milk, you know, there are a lot of working women, and they need to pump. Is it better to manually pump, or should an electric machine, or does it matter?
You know, I think it varies. It really varies from person to person. In this country, we do tend to go the electric pump route, but many moms can be very successful with manual expression once they learn the technique. So either way is fine, whatever works for her. What's been shown quite clearly, particularly in moms who are expressing milk for premature infants or infants who are ill who can't directly go to the breast yet, moms who are truly pump dependent, is that probably the combination of there's a technique combining manual expression and pumping, which produces the most milk for premature babies and babies who are ill. So as I said, it really depends on the mom, but it's important to teach them both techniques. Every mom should know how to manually express milk. It's just very important in a if she can, can't get, use her electric pump if...
Definitely. Trust me, because you'll hurt. I had to do, you know, both. And I, you know, fortunately, I was able to stay home with my daughter for about 6 months, and then I kind of went part-time. But I breastfed her for about a year, maybe a little more, but that's about it. But knowing, being able or not being, I guess being comfortable with manually breast, you know, pumping the milk is important, because I think it comes to the issue of women being comfortable with their bodies, and many women still this day and age don't learn about their bodies. That's one thing. And two, many women are not taught to, I guess, explore their body and be comfortable touching their body. And so that issue of manually breastfeeding, I think I agree with you, Dr. Vrshalik, it's so important. Now, Karen, how can they store this milk? How long can it last? Like you were mentioning, their babies who, you know, maybe in the NICU and can't get to the mom right away. How long can they store? Can they freeze it? Can they keep it just in the refrigerator? Talk about that a little bit.
Sure. In the NICU, we actually would like to have the milk as fresh as possible. So fresh pumped milk is the best. It can stay on the counter for up to 4 hours. Then we would put it in the refrigerator. There are different... In the literature, there are different times, but in the hospital, we use 4 days that it can stay in the refrigerator. And then after that, we use 4 months in the freezer. Although there are, for home use, extended periods of time for that. So there's all various ways that a mom can store her milk.
Now, Dr. Vrshalik, you know, there's this whole, oh, the baby's breastfeeding, and it's a wonderful experience for the mother and the child. That is true. But being someone who is breastfed, sometimes there are issues that arise. For example, sometimes you get clogs, and also you may be sore. The child starts to develop, you know, teeth. How can the woman deal with some of these challenges? Can you talk about that in terms of, like, maybe warm compresses, or what point should she go to the doctor to get checked out, depending on the challenge? Could you talk about that a little bit?
Sure. I think as we've kind of mentioned, the biggest challenge is getting off to a good start. But then there can be little bumps along the road. And, you know, again, babies, you know, human babies, you know, for human babies, breastfeeding is hardwired in their brain at birth. It's instinctive. But they need to be, as Karen said, in the right place with their mother in order to bring out that behavior. So once they've left the hospital, again, providers, you know, the doctors, nurses, lactation consultants, dietitians who provide care to these moms and babies need to know what to expect at different times. And we need to, again, you know, give anticipatory guidance to the moms and be available if they do experience a problem. So you mentioned plugging. Yeah, so something called plug ducts. Again, as the milk supply is developing, you know, for the first few weeks, moms tend to feel a fullness between feeds as the milk, you know, a certain amount of milk will build up between feeds, and then more is produced as the baby feeds. And it's, you know, the baby's feeding at the breast that tells the brain, you know, to make more milk. So it's important to, again, to get up to a right start and then, as Karen said, respond to the baby's cues. But sometimes... There are bumps, and plug ducts refers to, you know, some of the milk ducts that deliver the milk, you know, out, you know, toward the nipple into the baby, sometimes can get a little plug. So, again, that's usually something that happens in the first couple of weeks. So we need to, again, explain this might happen, explain to moms what to do. Again, usually a little warm compress, a little massage toward the breast, and then feeding in different positions, you know, changing the baby's position a little, will take care of that. But if that's not successful, they need to have a provider they can speak with, because if it's not resolved, plug ducts can lead to bigger problems like mastitis, which would be an infection, or severe engorgement, which is, you know, a severe you know, fullness and real pain.
Yeah, you don't want that. Yeah.
You don't want that.
No. Yeah, definitely.
And then, Okay. Now, then the other thing, again, just early, you know, around 5-6 weeks, most mothers experience a real softening of their breasts. And even if they're breastfeeding, you know, very well, and for some moms interpret that as oh, my milk supply is, you know, is decreased.
Low,
and
it's
not.
Mm-hmm.
It's just the body adjusting. And again, so if you can explain that to them ahead of time, you know, so in the, you know, let's say at the one-month visit with the baby, you know, so in the next few weeks, this, you know, you'll experience the softening. Don't worry. It's normal. It's just your body adjusting. You know, they get through it.
Right.
So it's a combination of both, the anticipatory guidance and then being there where, if they do have an issue, so you can get, you know, get it addressed right away.
I think it's just, like I said, these myths about breastfeeding, and I'm glad you mentioned about the softening of the breast. And also I think in America we have this idea of everything, the bigger, better. So it's you know, you know, you're seeing this, like, you want this big, fat, you know, baby, you know, like when you go to get a small at the restaurant, it's really a large, it's like 24 ounces, that's the small. You know, so you're looking and the baby's feeding and you're thinking, that's not 24 ounces. You know, you're in your mind, you know, you're saying all these things. But I think also the key is the baby healthy when they go for their checkups? You know, you're feeling good, the baby's feeling good. All those types of things need to be taken into account instead of it's not 36 ounces or whatever. You know what I mean? So that's important. Karen, I wanted to talk to you a little bit about fathers, because sometimes fathers can be felt left out. You know, they're like watching from the outer ring. What can fathers do to help with this breastfeeding? Can they feed the baby breast milk from the bottle? Somebody was mentioning maybe not from a bottle, using a cup. I did a Twitter chat on Thursday. Can you talk to me a little bit maybe about your opinion about that?
I love fathers. I think fathers are the best thing ever, because what fathers really do, what fathers really do is it's mom and baby, but it's fathers that support them, because without them, moms don't do very well. All right, so what fathers can really do is support mom. Mom and baby feed, and for the first month or so, it's a really good idea for moms to just breastfeed her baby, because then she's making a breast milk supply. All right, up to the first month or so, then, you know, if they want to have alternative feedings, that's okay. But dads really need to have moms feed, and then they can do everything else. What dads really can do is ward off a lot of visitors and a lot of things that distract mom from being able to be with her baby and to learn her baby's cues and to get her rest.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you get very tired. I know I really, like when I was breastfeeding, I definitely felt tired. Not like exhausted. I mean, as long as I ate properly and everything, but you do feel tired and you need to be relaxed. When you're stressed and tense, the baby, I think, feels that tension and they get antsy and, you know, maybe looking, wandering around at other things and not focusing on eating when they need to be eating. But Dr. Prashalik, were you about to say something?
Oh, no, just agree. No, yes, exactly right. Dads can also, if you know, when moms need to rest, dads can also cuddle with those babies, skin to skin. It's good for fathers and good for babies. It's a good way to bond as well.
Yeah, I think that's the attachment. Go ahead. Sorry, Karen.
Sorry. Actually, when you breastfeed, one of the things that happens is you get sleepy. That's normal. And the reason why you get sleepy is because you're supposed to go to bed and sleep when the baby sleeps. Because then you get your rest. And so it's in the body's natural way. Yeah, it's your body's natural way of protecting itself and being able to produce milk and for you and the baby to, you know, be in sync.
Now, Dr. Prashalik, we talked a lot about, I guess, micro issues here, but let's talk about some macro issues that women have to deal with when they're breastfeeding. For example, work. What have you heard from your patients in terms of issues they have to deal with at work, and how can maybe physicians in writing notes or, I don't know, how can the medical community support women who are working and talk to their employers, you know what I mean, in terms of FMLA or making a lactation station or something like that? Can you talk to that issue?
Sure. This is a huge, huge issue for so many of our moms. So, again, as a healthcare provider, you know, from the beginning, it's important for us to ask moms what their goals are as far as breastfeeding goes. And we know what the recommendations are. We know what we would do in the ideal world. I love it. You know, you said you had 6 months home with your baby and then part-time. Ah, I wish everyone could have that. I think one of the most important things we can do on a really macro level is provide paid leave.
Yes.
Some states, I mean, notably New Jersey and California, and there may be some others, do have some paid family leave related to their temporary disability funds. And New York, where I live, has had a number of bills that have not succeeded yet, but we're working on it. So, I mean, number one, I think if moms, I mean, yes, there's unpaid leave, you know, 12 weeks of unpaid leave is guaranteed through, you know, federal law, but that law is 21 years old. And you know, that was supposed to be the initial step in establishing paid leave. So that, I think, if everyone had, and we're one of the very few countries, really the only developed countries in the world that doesn't provide any paid leave. So I think that would be, if I could change anything. With my magic wand. Well, I would, immediate skin-to-skin in the delivery room, number one, and number two would be paid family leave for everybody. I think those would be the two things. But we don't have that. So I always say we don't live in an ideal world. And when I teach my residents and students and when I deal with moms, I do the same thing. So what are your plans? What are your goals? And then we need to check in with them because we know goals and plans change. So she may, and I think we try to work with them individually to breastfeed exclusively for as long as they can. For some, that's 4 weeks. For some, that's 4 months. For some, that's 6 months, like we recommend, you know, but it isn't going to work for everybody. And then, we work with them to try to help. This is a mom who can express milk at work. And, again, you know, for moms who tend to work in the more corporate world, they can usually do it. But for many of our moms who work in service industries, hourly workers, it's not always so easy. But, again, I've worked with moms, you know, who – clean houses, but are able to express milk, you know, and do other sort of non-traditional things. So some moms can be helped to work out a plan to express milk. And sometimes it, you know, it just isn't practical. So we help them breastfeed for as long and as much as they would like to. And so you have to individualize it. Now, understand, though, there are laws protecting women's right to break time, but they're not really well enforced and they're not really comprehensive. They don't cover all employers and all industries. I just wanted to mention the federal Office of Women's Health just put up on their website a wonderful, it's a toolkit. It's more or less directed at employers, but really, really good. It's good advice for moms too. It's really well done. And again, has lots of really real-life practical
information in it.
Suggestions, solutions for helping moms who work and helping employers.
Dr. Frischall, I'm sorry to cut you off. We're just running close to time. I wanted to bring Karen in to the conversation. Karen, we at the Twitter chat on Thursday, we were discussing the issue of breastfeeding in the public. Can you talk to me about, I know New York has a wonderful situation, but can you talk about any other campaigns across the country trying to fight that ability to be able to breastfeed in the public, and why is that important?
Well, most states have a law that women can breastfeed in public, and regardless of whether they show their nipple or not. What's important about it is that it normalizes breastfeeding across the country. So when women breastfeed in public, and we see them, we say, okay, this is the norm. We don't have to hide. We, you know, if a mother doesn't, you know, feels comfortable breastfeeding in public. And generally, what the public should do is say thank you for breastfeeding, because what she's doing is making a healthier society for all of us to live in. So we should all support mothers that breastfeed because it's good for everyone.
I agree. Well, I want to thank both of you, Dr. Vrsaljak and Karen, for coming on this morning. I think we covered a lot of issues. Of course, we could spend another half an hour talking. There are so many issues surrounding breastfeeding. But I want to thank you for sharing what your knowledge you had today. And you mentioned about the Women's Health website that has a toolkit for employers. Also, La Leche, you know, is a great resource for women to go to. And do you guys have a website for the New York Coalition?
Oh, for the Breast Coalition? Sure. Yes. It's nysbreastfeeding.org.
Okay, nysbreastfeeding.org. Okay, so that's another great resource that people can go to. Again, just trying to break all these myths. The baby, I breastfed my child for 6 months. She didn't eat any food until 6 months, and she was fine. She didn't have any problems. Nothing happened to her. So I encourage women out there, you know, to do what is comfortable for them, but don't be afraid that you're not expressing enough milk. And if you think that, then go and check with your provider, and they can verify yes or no, because sometimes that could happen. But in a lot of rare cases, that's not the case. It's just maybe your breasts are changing, like Dr. Vrsaljak mentioned, softening and things of that nature. Also, that Karen mentioned, there are a lot of laws protecting you in the public, so if you need to be in a restaurant and all of a sudden you need to feed your baby, you can feel comfortable that it's okay. Yes, you're right to do that and not worry. You know, you might get a little eye-looking, but, you know, you can go ahead and do it. Karen, Dr. Vrsaljak, thank you for coming on today.
Thank you for having us.
It's great.
You guys have a wonderful Saturday.
Thank you.
You too. Enjoy your...
Thank you so much. I want to thank the listeners for tuning in today, taking the time to listen to the show. We had a great show, two wonderful guests, and stay tuned for upcoming shows. Again, follow me at Joy Keys on Twitter. Become a fan on Facebook. And also check me out on Instagram. I'm Saturdays with Joy Keys on Instagram. And again, if you tag me or you follow, you might win a prize. I just gave away a DVD the other day. Somebody received a movie, Half of Yellow Sun. The other day, somebody won a book of poetry. So again, I encourage you. You actually will get the prizes. It's not a scam. And thank you so much for tuning in. And you all have a wonderful Saturday.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.